Well, if you ask my wife, Erica, she will tell you that there are not too many scenarios in life that leave me at a loss for words. I like to talk. If there's a joke to be told, I'm probably going to tell it. If there's silence to be filled, I will most likely attempt to try and fill it. But there is actually one scenario that happens often in life where my words do tend to dry up a little bit, where I am a little bit at a loss for words. And it's the conversations that I have with people when I learn about the pain and the suffering that's happening in their lives, or the pain or the suffering that's happening in the lives of people that they love. It's the times when I learn about the death or the disease or the disaster or the diagnosis that is currently happening in someone's life. And my words start to dry up because I get scared in that moment that I won't necessarily have the right answer to the question that I assume that people are asking in that moment. It's a question that I am going to guess that many of you have asked before at one time or another. And that question is this: why? Why do bad things happen? And more specifically than that, why do bad things happen to good people? Why is there evil in this world? Why is there pain? And why is there suffering? And why is there heartache in this world? Any of you by chance ever asked a question like that before? Yeah, I'm guessing you have. If that's the case, I'm really glad you're here today, because we're in the second week of this series called I Have a Question, where we are exploring a list of commonly asked questions that people have about faith or about God or about church or about the Bible. And if I was a betting man, which I am not, I would bet a lot of money that this question is very near to the top of that list, if not the number one question on that list. And I would also be willing to bet that this is maybe the number one reason why people have a hard time believing in God or putting their faith in God. And maybe that's the case for you here today. I mean, the reality is there is so much pain, so much darkness, so much sadness, so much loss, so much evil and suffering in this world. There's hunger, and there's poverty, and there's tsunami, and there's racism, and there's hate, and there's violence. And the question is, for those things and for so many other things, the question is why? Why in the world would an all-loving and an all-powerful God allow this to go on in the world? Especially, and this is what makes it so hard for us, especially to good people. Why would an all-powerful and an all-loving God allow this to go on in the world? Right? If God was all-powerful, which we believe he is, he could stop it, right? And if he was all-loving, which we believe he is, then he just should stop it, right? And yet he doesn't. Or at least he hasn't. And so we're left to wonder why. That's a little bit of what I want to talk about today. I want to try to answer this question for you. And before I go long on this whole subject, because there's a lot to say, before I go long, let me first give to you my very short, my very definitive answer about why bad things happen to good people. If you have a pen and paper, maybe you want to write this down. Here's my short, definitive answer to this question. You'll see it on the screen. I don't have one. I don't have a short, definitive answer to this question. And that's partly why my words start to dry up when I learn about the pain and the suffering and the sickness and the sadness that people are experiencing. Because the reality is there is no easy answer, right? Evil and pain and suffering, it's not a mathematical equation, right? I wish it was. I mean, part of what I love about my job, part of what I love about being up here every Sunday is to try to present to all of you some issue or some problem or some question, and then turn to the Bible and go, boom, solved it, fixed it, answered it. You're welcome, everybody. I'll be here all week. But But I can't totally do that here because there's not as much of an answer to give as much as there is a larger conversation for us to have. And so I want to invite you today into that larger conversation. And more specifically, what I want to do with you is share a few thoughts about evil and about pain and about suffering and about why bad things could possibly happen to good people. And as we dive into this here, what I want to do is I just want to frame for you a little bit before we get started. I want to frame for you the whole conversation that I'm going to invite you into by suggesting that these questions we ask, God, why does this happen? Why is there evil? Why do bad things happen? These questions that we ask, I think they're typically built on some assumptions that we all make, some very common assumptions that we all make. We make assumptions about the world. We make assumptions about life, about good and evil, about pain and suffering, and maybe even about God. And I think it's these assumptions that we make, that we assume to be true, that lead us to ask these questions that we do. But it's those assumptions that I don't always think are 100% right. And so it's those assumptions that I want to talk about today, and it's those assumptions that I even want to challenge today for all of us. And there's four of them that I want to introduce to you, four assumptions that I think that we make that lead us to ask these hard questions that we do in the first place. And I want to re-examine them. So here's assumption number one. Assumption number one is this, that we make. There is a one-to-one correlation between sin and suffering. I think that's the assumption that we make. There's a one-to-one correlation between sin and suffering. What in the world does that even mean, Sten? Let me explain. See, I think most of us operate somewhat inherently with this one-to-one correlation that there is a direct cause and effect relationship between personal sin and between suffering. The translation of that is this. Most of us go through this world assuming that this is how things work. Good things happen to good people, and bad things happen to bad people. Now we assume good things happen to good people, and bad things happen to bad people. And the reality is that some of us have lost faith. Some of us have given up on faith. Some of us have questioned our faith, or maybe never even had an interest in faith at all because of this kind of theology, because of this kind of way of thinking. And if that's you, then I would just very humbly and very gently suggest to you that you have the wrong theology. I mean, truthfully, the very first Christians 2,000 years ago, they never believed this. They never believed that good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. In fact, they believed, and they started a revolution because of it. They believed that the worst thing possible happened to the best possible person. Think about it. They believed that the worst possible thing you could imagine happened to the best possible person. That is the story, the essence of Christianity. Think about it, right? A perfect, a blameless, a sinless man was betrayed, falsely accused, tortured, and excruciatingly murdered on a cross. Right? The very first Jesus followers that began this Jesus movement, they simply did not believe that bad things don't happen to good people. And the truth is, what we'll discover here in a second is, the truth is, I don't think Jesus believed that either. In fact, one of Jesus's first followers at that time, his name was John, he records a moment from the life of Jesus that I think highlights this for us, and I want you to see it today. It's from John chapter 9, and it's actually a story that I have recently read for us here, but I want to look at it again today from a different angle. Here's what John writes. He says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been blind from birth. Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? You see what's happening here? Do you see their gut reaction to this? It's often not all that different than ours. Their gut reaction is to buy into this assumption. that good things happen to good people and bad things happen to bad people. So if this man was blind, well, then he must have done something pretty bad. And if it wasn't him, then it was probably his parents, someone very close to him. Otherwise, he wouldn't be experiencing this kind of pain and this kind of suffering. Here's Jesus' response, verse 3. No. He says, no, it was not because of his sins or his parents' sins, Jesus answered. This happened so that the power of God could be seen in him. Okay, let me pause here for just a moment. Notice that Jesus didn't say they're sinless. He didn't say, no, these people, they've never sinned before. He just said it wasn't their sins that caused this. And what that implies to me is that, yes, they have sinned just like you have and just like I have. But no, it wasn't the man's sins or it wasn't his parents' sins that made him blind. There wasn't a one-to-one relationship between personal sin and personal suffering. And so this man was blind then, not because of the personal consequences of sin, but because of the global consequences, because of the historical consequences of sin, right? It was not the personal consequences of his sin or someone close to him that led to personal suffering. It was the global consequences of sin that was at play. See, when Adam and Eve in the garden, when they first disobeyed God's instructions to them, it completely fractured everything that God had created to be good and to be perfect and to be beautiful. So the very first time that man and woman sinned, what it did is it held the door open for brokenness and for pain and for suffering to come rushing in behind it. For all of humanity. What am I getting at? There simply is not a one-to-one cause and effect relationship between personal sin and suffering. Okay? That's not to say that it makes pain and suffering and darkness and evil any bit easier. But that is simply not how it works. So I think that's the first assumption that we need to re-examine a little bit here. Here's number two. Nothing good. This is the assumption that I think so many of us make. Nothing good comes from pain and suffering. Nothing. Okay. Now, before you think I'm like some twisted psychopath for even suggesting anything different, hear me out on this, right? I think we ask the hard questions that we do because of an underlying belief that we have that there is really no possible reason. There is no good reason to allow pain, that there is absolutely zero, zilch, nada, nothing good that could ever possibly come from pain and suffering whatsoever. And I understand that. I understand where that assumption comes from. I understand where that hope or that belief maybe comes from. But what I want to do here is hold out for you a story from the Old Testament of a man named Joseph who I think actually suggests something different to us. Okay, for any of you Bible professionals, you Bible experts here today, you may remember that Joseph is the youngest of 12 sons. And even though the number one rule of parenting, both today and generations ago, was that no, you are not supposed to have favorites as a mom and a dad, what we find out is that Joseph is his dad's favorite son, okay? And his brothers, every one of them older, his brothers hate him. Hate him, capital H, because of it. Okay, they actually hate their younger brother Joseph so much that one day they cannot take it any longer. And so they actually take him out into a field and they shove him into a pit and they leave him for dead. Okay, one of the brothers actually has some sliver of a conscience and he says, no, we can't leave him here to die. And so they come up with plan B. This is so kind of them. Okay, this is so kind, plan B here. Well, let's just sell him off to a group of traders passing by. Okay, we won't leave him to die. We'll just sell him off to these group of travelers on their way passing by. Those traders in turn sell him off. They sell Joseph off to be a slave in the house of a very high-ranking Egyptian official. While he is working there, get this. Okay, so he's already been left for dead. He's already been hated. While he's there in this foreign country as a slave to a ranking official, he gets falsely accused of sexual assault, and he gets thrown into prison. The dude cannot catch a break. He's hated, abused, abandoned, sold, separated from his family and from his home. He's accused, and now he's imprisoned and behind bars in a foreign country. Okay, talk about pain, talk about evil, talk about suffering, talk about wrong, talk about bad things happening to a pretty good dude. However, if you fast forward this story, which I'm going to do quite a bit here. Skip over quite a few things that happen. If you fast forward through this story, Joseph actually works himself into the good graces of Pharaoh, the top Egyptian official. He actually develops a plan for all of Egypt to navigate and to prepare for 7 years of famine that they learn is going to strike the entire region. And because of Joseph's wisdom, he actually becomes second in command to Pharaoh. And under his leadership, food is preserved and food is ultimately distributed for each of those 7 years to people they need it, not only throughout Egypt, but actually throughout the entire surrounding region as well, including the region where Joseph's family, where Joseph's brothers lived. And so in the end, Joseph's own brothers, they come to Egypt in search of food. And when they discover that their fate is in the hands of their brother, who they left for dead, they're mortified. They're like, dang, we are screwed. He's not giving us any food. And so they throw themselves at their brother's feet and they plead for mercy. Please, we got to eat. And Joseph shows them great mercy, which is pretty cool. He shows them great mercy, but here's what's best. What's best is how he responds to them in the end of this whole deal. We find his response to his brothers in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. Here's what he says to them. He says, "You intended to harm me when you hated me, when you left me for dead, when you sold me off. You intended to harm me. But God intended it for good. He brought me to this position. He brought me to this place. He saw me through all of the junk. He saw me through all of the pain. He saw me through all of the suffering. He saw me through all of the bad things that happened to a pretty good dude so that I could save the lives of many people." Did Joseph suffer? You better believe he did. But was God working and present in the midst of it? You better believe that too. Friends, God does not cause our pain, but he is not limited by it either. He can and he will use it for a whole lot of good if we would let him, if we would allow him. And so the question is, are you or are we or am I willing to look for the good that God could do even in the midst of our pain? Hard question, no doubt about it. But the results could be world-changing. Okay, here's the third assumption that we make that I think leads to the hard questions that we ask about God. Here's assumption number three. The existence of pain. Okay, just the fact that it goes on in our world today, the existence of pain and the existence of suffering, it proves that God is not good. How could he be? The sheer fact that it happens proves that God is not good. And if he is good, well, then it proves that he's really not all that powerful. Okay, this assumption is a little bit of what I alluded to at the beginning, right? If God is all powerful, he could do something about it. And if he was all loving, well, then he should do something about it, right? And if he doesn't, well, maybe he's just really not that good of a God after all. Friends, I would actually argue, I would actually suggest to you today that the presence of pain, the existence of pain and suffering ultimately demonstrates how truly good God is. Let me explain why. To do so here very quickly, let me just briefly here, let me venture into the world of the Justice League comic book series, okay? Now, I am not a comic book guy, like, at all, really, and I don't really know how many of you are either, but so what I want to do then is just try to summarize for you one particular episode that I came across this week from the Justice League comic book series. In this particular episode, Superman, he has had enough of the crime on the streets and the evil in the world, and so he reaches a point where he says, that's it. No more. Not on my watch. He realizes that he is fast enough, that he's strong enough, and that he's powerful enough to eliminate all of it. And so he does. He eliminates all crime and all evil, but in the process, he becomes a totalitarian dictator. Okay? He uses his power to end evil, but in the process of it all, he ceases to be good himself. Because he takes away everyone's freedom. Eliminating evil meant eliminating their freedom. Folks, that's a trade that God is not willing to make because he is so good. Okay, is he powerful enough to eliminate it? Sure, I think he is. But then I think he'd have to eliminate our freedom. And he's not willing to do that. So we have to understand that this freedom that God gives to us, it is a great, great gift from a good God. But it comes with this choice, right? If we have freedom to choose to do good, to be loving, then we also have to have the freedom to choose to do what is evil or to choose to do what is wrong. You don't have one without the other. C.S. Lewis, he's the great Christian writer, Christian thinker. He says it like this. He says, free will, though it makes evil possible, is the only thing that makes possible any love or any goodness or any joy worth having. Friends, God, in all of his goodness, he gave us this freedom. He gave us this freedom, and the reality is that freedom comes with a choice that makes that gift so good to begin with. And when humanity does not make the right choice with the choice that we're presented, when humanity does not make the right choice, which we rarely do, okay? And when pain and when suffering and evil is the reality, which oftentimes it is, we have to understand it does not mean that God is not good. It does not mean that God does not care. It does not point to the reality that God is distant. In fact, I believe it's just the opposite. See, the incredible news of Christianity is that God, in his goodness, he actually enters into our pain. That's what separates Christianity from just about every other world religion, that God actually came to us, right? Life and faith and spirituality, it wasn't about climbing some ladder to make our way up to God, but it was actually about God coming down that ladder right to us, into our world, into our humanity, into our pain, into our suffering, into our hunger, into our poverty. Right, John begins his New Testament letter by saying the Word, which is Jesus, the Word became flesh and lived among us. The songs we sing and the stories we read at Christmas remind us of Emmanuel, which means what? God is with us. He entered in to our pain. God gave us a solution to sin. And here's what's so incredible. He does not offer that solution from the comforts of home. Okay? He doesn't say, hey, yeah, come on up and get it. He brought it right down to us. He could have just shouted his love for us from heaven, but he didn't do that. Instead, he showed us his love by showing up on this earth, right in the midst of the pain that we experience. The existence of pain and the existence of suffering, it didn't prove that God wasn't good. Pain and suffering and darkness and evil and heartache, it simply snuck in the back door when sin held that door open in the beginning. And yet God chose to enter into it, to enter into your pain, to enter into my pain, to enter into the pains of this world, to show how good and to show how loving he really was. That's number three. Here's number four, and I'm gonna close with this. Here's the last assumption that we make that I think that we need to rethink. Assumption number four is this: God created evil. Right? So sometimes isn't that kind of what we're led to believe? God created everything, right? And so somehow God must have created. He kind of must be the source of, or the author of evil and of pain and of suffering. See, when our faith falls apart, or when it's challenged, or when we lose faith in God altogether because of the fact that bad things happen to good people, I think it's because we assume it's God's fault. He created evil. He introduced evil into this world, didn't he? And so we wonder, why would he do that? But here's what we have to understand. God gave Adam and Eve a choice in the garden. Essentially, he says to them, partner with me, God says to Adam and to Eve, he says, partner with me and continue to create more beauty in this world by trusting what I'm telling you is right and wrong, or don't trust me and instead choose to define right and choose to define wrong for yourselves. And what do they choose? They choose to define right and wrong on their own terms, right? Satan says, really? Really, God says this is bad? God said no, God said you couldn't do that? What's he trying to do? Is he trying to hold you down? Sounds strange to me. And they're going, yeah, I think I tend to agree. And so they choose to take matters into their own hands. And at that moment, when they made a choice, at that moment, sin entered the world, and disease and death and pain and suffering followed in behind it. And that choice, I mean, if we really break it down here, I think that choice, in a way, I think it points, hear me out, I think it points the finger, in a way, right back at them, and I think it points the finger, in a way, right back at you and me. Christian writer Natasha Crane says this. She says that God made moral evil possible by creating free creatures, but we are responsible for making it actual. Okay? God is only good if we also have the choice. Excuse me, I say good is only good. Good is only good if we also have the choice to do what is not so good. And so in a sense, evil, listen to me closely here. In a sense, evil is a necessary possibility. Good is only good if we also have the choice to do what is not so good. So in a sense, evil is purely a necessary possibility. God made it possible. We made it actual. Friends, the reality is we have to just admit, and this isn't like, you know, I'm not pointing my finger at anybody. I'm not trying to come down on anyone here today, because I'd have to come down on me just as hard. We have to admit that a lot of times we're no different than Adam and Eve, tempted by desires inside of us that are not pleasing to God. Okay, the New Testament writer, James, he writes this. He says, but each person, you, me, those generations ago and those for generations to come, each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. It's that desire that sank Adam and Eve, and it's the same desires that do the same thing to you and me. Mid-Current, the reality is those desires, that are not of God, those desires could be described as evil, right? Contrary to the good that God created in this world. And the reality is we all have them inside of us. There's a little bit of evil inside of you, and there's a little bit of evil inside of me. And I don't say that with the intention that we leave here and just beat ourselves up, you know, for the rest of our lives, right? I don't say that with the intention that's how we start to look at ourselves in the world, that we walk through life with this kind of lens that says, oh man, we're just no good, rotten, evil kind of people. That's not the point. But the reality is that God created us to be good, but because of sin that entered the world, we aren't always, we just have to be clear about this, we aren't always the good. All of us, you, me, we aren't always the good that we were intended to be. And so it seems to me, as I think through a lot of this stuff, it seems to me, if I can kind of just turn the tables here for a second, it seems to me that maybe the question, or a question worth exploring today, is not necessarily why do bad things happen to good people, but maybe the question worth considering in light of what I just mentioned here, maybe the question worth considering is, why do good things happen to people who aren't always so good? Why do good things happen to you and to me, when the reality is that we aren't always so good? We aren't always the good that God created us to be. Midcurrent, I would say that the answer is because God is good, and he is full of grace, and he is full of mercy, and he does not, and he did not treat us as our sins deserve. He does not hold us accountable to the consequences of our sin. Instead, he took the consequences upon himself, right? He entered into our world, into our pain that was caused by sin, and he took the consequences of that sin upon himself, and he paid a price that we deserve to pay, and he offered to us a final solution to that sin. And on top of that, here's what we have to understand. On top of that, he promised us that there would be a day when there is no more sin, when there is no more suffering, when there is no more hunger, when there is no more poverty, when there is no more hate, when there is no more cancer, when there is no more chemotherapy. And that list goes on and on and on. He promised us a day. The very last book in the Bible points to that day. It describes that day that God promised to us. It's Revelation 21, verse 4. And it says this about that day, that there will be a day when he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things gone forever. I'll tell you what, folks, I'm looking forward to that day. I'm looking forward to that day. But unfortunately, it is not here yet. And as much as we hate the pain, as much as we hate the suffering, the reality is I'm not totally sure that we can pray it all away, or that we can faith it all away, or that we can obey it all away, because it is a necessary possibility for you and for me. In Genesis 1 and 2, God created the world and said it was good, perfect. In Revelation 21 and 22, we're promised that it would be good and that it would be perfect once again. Right now, we're living in the middle. We're living in the very messy middle, where unfortunately pain and evil and suffering is a reality. And so we hold on to that hope that Revelation points to. We hold on to that hope about a future day when this evil, this pain, this suffering is no longer the reality anymore. C.S. Lewis, who I quoted before, C.S. Lewis writes this that I want to close with today. He writes, "If we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that we were made for another world." I know for one, there is a very strong desire inside of me to see this world rid of cancer that took the life of my own dad. I have a very strong and intense desire inside of me to see this world rid of the racism and the hate that sometimes takes the life of someone else's dad, someone else's son, someone else's mom, someone else's daughter. I have an intense desire inside of me to see this world rid of hunger and of poverty and of communities that don't have access to clean water. Intense desire inside of me to see this world rid of disease and of violence that still wreaks havoc in just about every single corner of the world today. And I'm not saying that we give up trying to create a better world while we're here on it. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that we just sit on our hands or sit on the sidelines in the midst of it all. But so far, I'm only 35 years old. So far in 35 years, there isn't a whole lot in this world that seems to satisfy those desires inside of me. And so I have to assume that maybe the same is true for you. And so perhaps the only probable explanation is that we truly were made for another world. And friends, the good news about all this is that Jesus invited us to that world, to that day. John 3:16 says that God loved this world so much. He loved you and he loved me so much that he actually gave up his only son so that whoever believed in him would not perish, but would have everlasting life with him. In this world, in this day, in this place where there is no more death, where there is no more tears, no more sorrow, and no more pain. And I'll tell you what, I'm banking on that promise. And I'm holding out with everything that I have for that day. And I hope the same would be true for you. Let me pray for us. God, the reality for so many people here today is the reality of pain and suffering, disease, disaster, depression. God, the list goes on. And in trying to talk about it, God, in trying to answer it, so to speak, I don't want to suggest to anyone that's sitting in the midst of pain or darkness or evil or suffering, God, I don't want to suggest to anyone that I'm saying it's not a big deal or that they should just get over it, right? Because that's how the world works. That's not what we're saying here, God. The reality is we are experiencing pain. And when it breaks our heart and when it overwhelms us, we know that it overwhelms you too. And we know that it breaks your heart. And so, God, that's why we thank you. That's why we're in awe of the fact that in the midst of our pain, you chose to enter right into it alongside of us, God. So for anybody that is in the midst of pain and suffering right now, God, I pray that they would have a sense come over them, maybe like they never have before, that you are there with them in the midst of it. God, you are there with them in the moment. God, would you whisper to them that you see them, that you care for them, that you are good, and that you do have a good future, not only for our life here on this earth, God, but a glorious future in the life to come. God, would you remind us of that each and every day? And certainly, God, we do everything we can to make this world a better place. But until then, God, we set our sights and we set our hopes and we set our dreams on the future that you created for us, the day when there is no more darkness, no more crying, no more tears, no more pain, no more cancer, no more chemo, no more treatment. And God, I pray that if there's anybody here that has not accepted your invitation to that time and to that place and to that world and to this relationship with your son, Jesus, I pray that today they might do that. That right here in this moment, God, right here in this place, they might raise their hand. They might say yes to you and to a relationship with you, God, that makes life everlasting possible. God, we thank you for your son, Jesus, who did enter into our pain to walk alongside of us. We thank you for the amazing gift that he is that we did not deserve, but that you gave him to us anyway because you are so, so good. God, would you be our guide as we walk out of these doors into a world where there is pain and suffering? And would you give us strength to face it all each and every day? God, we pray these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen. Hey, we are really glad that you could be here today as we engage with these questions and talk about them together as a church. If you're in need of prayer today, we'd love to pray for you. We'll have some folks here at the front to pray with you before you leave. Please take advantage of that to talk about the pain and the heartache that might be happening in your life right now, or to talk to them maybe about the decision that you made to say, hey, you know what, I want to say yes. I want to raise my hand to this relationship with Jesus who entered into this world for me. So make sure to do that. Otherwise, shake a hand and introduce yourself to someone new on the way out, and we will look forward to seeing you right back here on site or online at 10:30 a.m. for another week in our series, I Have a Question. God bless you.